So, like we already said, we were going to go collecting today, and we're getting the first round of rain right now. I look at the radar. It actually looks like it may not rain too much longer, but I think we're supposed to get a bunch more later today. Mm-hmm. Last night's news said we were in the 1 to 2 inches of rain area again, so. But, as I said, you got that email again I sent yesterday. I sent one out yesterday saying I got more stuff uploaded to the website. So, I think we're ready for the other arthropod lectures and that. But anyway, they're saying, yeah, by Tuesday, high of 81. And the one meteorologist I saw, I mean, they look at different models and try to pick which model they think is going to be the most accurate. But the one he said, he saw that there was one model that actually said we may hit 89 next week. But he said most of them aren't saying that, so that's probably. But anyway, I'm hoping that we can get some good collecting in next week then. So today and tomorrow, though, then we'll start talking about the other little bit of evolution as we work our way into it, and then talk about other arthropods. So, do we have any questions before we get started? The other arthropods, spiders and centipedes and millipedes, that's what we're talking about. So
the first part sounds like a bit of review from our
I'm hoping it'd be some review and some new material. But,
this is new for me.
Well, that's good. You learn a lot then. So anyway, starting, I'm going to get to the overhead. Work over the whiteboard for a little bit. I'd like to have this thing. Good thing I didn't break that glass down there. I'd like to have it down at this end. Hooked up. So, anyway, to get us started, again, we're at the Kingdom Animalia, right? Mm-hmm. And the group that we'll be talking about is in the phylum Arthropoda. Mm-hmm. What is phylum? What does Arthropoda literally mean?
Arthro, I can't remember. Poda means probably feet. Means legs.
Yeah, poda is feet. I don't know what arthro is.
Arthro means jointed, or that. So it's jointed legs. So literally, it's jointed, and that's one of the characteristics of the groups we'll be getting to. Is they both? Most of them have jointed legs. Again, the Arthropoda, like I mentioned, it contains a lot of things we're familiar with. The spiders, the mites, millipedes, centipedes, the crustaceans like shrimp and crabs. And so we'll go through all those different groups. But first, we should talk about the Arthropoda in general. Some of the things that define the Arthropoda. Again, you guys got the outlines and stuff. I keep looking at those myself just to keep me on track. But anyway, they have bodies that are usually segmented. And in most of the Arthropoda, those segments are grouped into regions. For example, the insects, you guys know the head, the thorax, and the abdomen, right? Mm-hmm. And so the other groups, there's also body regions. It's different than what we see in the insects, but generally speaking, segmented bodies that are grouped into body regions. They usually do have the paired segmented appendages. They have bilateral symmetry. You know what bilateral symmetry is, right? Cut it right down the middle and you get two equal halves, essentially. They have a chitinous exoskeleton. means their harder outer shell has chitin in it. Mm-hmm. Now, I talk more about this in morphology, but I always, when I was younger, always thought, well, insects have a hard shell, and it's well known they have chitin in them, so chitin is hard. But chitin's not really a hard, it's the sclerotin in the exoskeleton that makes it hard. Mm-hmm. So chitin is just another...
I was trying to remember that word the other day.
What?
Sclerotin, sclerotize.
Yeah, yeah. They have a tubular alimentary canal. Alimentary canal is the digestive system. So it's just basically in arthropods, it starts at the mouth and there's a tube that runs all the way back to the anus. And then it'll be subdivided into chambers a little bit, but essentially it's just a long tube going from one end to the other. So they have an open circulatory system. Remember your insects, they do have a dorsal blood vessel. There's one blood vessel along the back, but basically that just helps pump. It's almost like more mostly called a heart or chambered, lots of chambered that does the pumping. Mm-hmm. But it moves the blood around, but it dumps it right out into a large open hemocele, a big cavity in the body. So the most of the blood, it's not, they don't have vessels going like veins and arteries going all over the place. That just dumps the blood into this big cavity which flows around in the body. Their nervous system, they have an anterior brain that's usually located more dorsally above the digestive system, but as it goes backwards, it posteriorly, it then goes downward and forms a ventral nerve cord. So most arthropods have a ventral nerve cord. They have striated skeletal muscles. Generally speaking, excretion is through little tubules. Remember the Malpighian tubules? So these are little tubules that are kind of free floating in the hemocele where the blood and hemolymph is, and the waste materials go into these little tubules which then connect up with the digestive system towards the posterior end, and the waste materials then go on out the anus. So respiration can be variable. It can be by gills, tracheae, and the spiracles. We know the openings that form with the trachea inside mostly, but in the arthropods the sexes are nearly always separate. You have male individuals and female individuals. Now I'm going to give you what we kind of the relationships that we've always done traditionally. The phylum Arthropoda, we have always kind of thought that the nearest or the most closely related to the phylum Annelida. You know what the annelids are, the Annelida?
Worms.
Worms, yep. So traditionally we've considered the Arthropoda be most closely related to the segmented worms, the Annelida. Just be aware, in a minute I'll talk more about it, but there's some now differences of opinion on that. Things that the Arthropoda and the Annelida have in common is, again, they have the body that's divided into segments. Again, thinking of worms or earthworms, you see the segments. The worms also have a nervous system that has a ventral nerve cord. And of course, their bodies are also bilaterally symmetrical. Well, there's some things that make worms different than the arthropods, though.
Not exactly.
Poda.
Pardon?
No poda.
Yep, they don't have legs. In general, they don't. I think there's some polychaete worms that may have some, but in general, yeah, no legs.
When you try to divide a arthropod into separate parts, you're going to get like a body and a trunk, cephalothorax, and a You can divide them into segments of worms. You can't really do it.
The body segments are not usually grouped into body regions. We don't have the head, thorax, and abdomen, or trunk, like you were saying in that. So, they have also a closed circulatory system. So the hemolymph's not just in a big cavity. They don't have tracheae to breathe by. Mm-hmm. Their excretory system is different. They don't have the malpighian tubules and that. Skeleton muscles are non-striated, and the exoskeleton does not have chitin in it. So now, when we've talked about this arrangement, we've also talked about a group in the middle called Onychophora. These are the velvet worms. Scientific name, I think, is Peripatus. And I don't know, it may be in your handout. I don't think I really care if you know all the characters, just suffice it to say that the Onychophora has some characters that it shares with the Arthropoda, and it has some characters that it shares with the Annelida, and of course there's some things that it has that are different than both. For example, the Onychophora has the trachea and spiracles like the arthropods do, but they're numerous and scattered all over the place, whereas like in insects, you know, there's just a pair per every segment, and they're generally speaking in the same place. Onychophora, they do have legs, but they're more fleshy type legs, not really the nice jointed legs. So anyway, the take home is traditionally they thought the arthropods may have arisen from an old ancestor that was like the earthworms, and this Onychophora group is in between. Something's not sitting right with you.
Yeah, no, I've never seen these guys before. Just,
what,
the velvet worms? They got little nubs on the side.
Yeah, we may have. I'll have to look in that. I think we used to have some. Jerry's got the other arthropods out here for you to start looking at in the lab. And I'll check and see. I think we used to anyway. Let's see if we got. Oh, I did mean to bring something else with me too. But anyway, we'll check on that. But now I'll tell you again, there's been some difference of opinions and some different thoughts. And now there's been more of a movement towards grouping together the arthropods with the nematoda. So the arthropods, arthropoda, and the nematoda, which are another kind of worm. They're different worms. You know, the nematodes are worm-like anyway, but they're not earthworms. But they group these two together in a group they call the Ecdyzoa. Make sure I spelled that right. Yep. Oh, Ecdyzoa. Ecdyzozoa. Why do you think they might group these two together? You guys remember what ecdysis means?
Molting. Well, not molting.
Molting. These groups goes through periodic molts.
Mm-hmm.
So. So, these two are grouped together with a few other small phyla into a group called the Ecdyzoa. Their DNA, this is based on DNA similarities, but all of these animals have in common a cuticle, which is periodically molted. The annelids are being placed in a whole different group with the mollusks, and the platyhelminthes and the rotifera, and they call that the Lophotrochozoa. Lophotrochozoa. Crocozoa. So anyway, I mean, again, this has been what we've done for so many years. In fact, we've got, I don't know if I've included them anywhere in your, I know I do in morphology, but we even draw out a long earthworm and show that at one time we thought they had legs on every single segment. And all then all the legs kind of disappeared. Those that were up at the anterior part started to form mouth parts. Those in the next few segments started to take on more of the locomotion, while all those on the abdomen disappeared. But we have all these intermediate steps showing how the earthworm kind of evolved into a arthropod. And now it may, all that may not even be accurate, because we have this new thought. So anyway, I wanted you to know what we traditionally do. You'll see it places, and just know that there's always, again, change that they're talking about that may be all different.
So are these changes based on, like, previous existing fossils or, like, genetics this time?
This is mostly, I think, based on genetics. And then after, the way it kind of works is people start doing, I mean, we base what we think on morphology. And a lot of it can be pretty darn good. And then they do the DNA work, and we notice some things that don't quite fit. And you see, all these are new groups based on the genetics. And once we see that, we go back and look at the morphology again and say, oh, look, there is some different morphologies too that we just didn't notice before. So, but most of this stuff, I think, is extant, if they're not extinct type things, so. Okay, one little refresher, again, this ought to about be just review again. But again, we talk about the arthropods having the different body regions. There's actually three basic body plans in the arthropoda. There's what we call the arachnoid. So the arachnoid body plan, again, arachnoid, you think of spiders, but there's two body regions. So two regions.
Cephalothorax and
abdomen.
Oh my god, why my brain? Abdomen.
Yeah, cephalothorax. Cephalo meaning head, so it's kind of like the head and thorax together. Mm-hmm. But a cephalothorax and an abdomen, sometimes they'll call it the prosoma.
Episoma.
Yeah. Opistho means backwards. Like insects that have mouth parts that are back, going back towards their body are opisthonathous. Opistho means backwards. But the big thing is, where are the locomotor appendages?
They are
right.
The abdomen.
So in this one, loco on cephalothorax. We have what we call the myriapod body plan. The myriapod is what to have in your head is millipedes and centipedes and that sort of thing. So again, myriapod, they really only have two regions. But now where are the locomotor appendages, the legs?
All on the trunk.
They're on the posterior one. So loco is, and actually they do pretty much just call it the trunk. But it'd be more like the, well, the hind one.
I was going to say, I was so boggled when I learned they only had two regions, because it looks like they should have so many in the back of my head.
Yeah. And then there's the insectin that we're most familiar with. Now you've got three body regions. Head, thorax, and abdomen. And of course the locomotor appendages are on the middle one, the thorax. Okay. Any questions so far? Now we're going to concentrate. We've been leading up to the arthropods. Now we're going to start looking at things within the arthropods. And here again, there's some debate on what the actual groups we should recognize within the phylum Arthropoda. Some people talk about that there's only three main groups. They call it the Trilobita, the Chelicerata, and the Mandibulata. Some say that the Trilobita should be in the Mandibulata. Others still recognize four subphyla. And this is what your textbook does. So we're going to follow what your text says. They say that here we have, again, the Arthropoda. And they say there's a subphylum. This is phylum. This would be subphylum Trilobita. Subphylum Chelicerata. I believe the other one would be like the the Crustacea. And then the Atelocerata. Trilobites are an old extinct group, which we'll talk about all these, but the Chelicerata are the things that have chelicerae, and we're talking about spiders, mites, scorpions. The Crustacea would be the lobsters, shrimp, and related groups. And the Atelocerata would be the millipedes, centipedes, and then the insects. As I said, some people have lumped the Trilobites in with some of the other groups, the Mandibulata. Well, I say Mandibulata, and others group these two together and call it the Mandibulata. Chelicerata had chelicerae as part of their mouth parts. These groups have more like mandible type things. And we will start with the Trilobites. And that's what I forgot to bring with me. I had the Trilobites are all extinct now. And I don't think Jerry had made a handout for the Trilobites, but I did have one, a fossil. Fossil went in. Yeah, he's got a little one here. We can pass these around. I've got another one in my office. But you can see in here, there's a couple fossil Trilobites. Anyway, they are now extinct. There were, or we know of, about 17,000 species, so they were fairly common. They lived during the Paleozoic era. They were marine animals. They were one of the more generalized group of arthropods, because their legs were all about the same. They didn't have much differentiation in their legs. They did have a pair of antennae. They're kind of flat, oval, flattened ventrally with a double series of jointed limbs on all segments except the last. They had three body regions, the head, thorax, and what we call the pygidium. What else is important? Their upper surface, you'll see this term come up a lot. Even though a lot of these things have segmented bodies, they'll have a hard covering over the top so you can't see the segments. And we call that a carapace. So you see carapace, it's kind of like a hard shell like over the top, like a... You've all seen lobster or shrimp has a hard covering over part of their body. These could have been as large as 28 inches in length, so they could have been over 2 feet. They had compound eyes. Really, that's about all we'll say about them. There's probably pictures on the internet of them in that in your book too. So, but that's the subphylum Trilobita. Like I said, this is phylum Arthropoda. These are subphylum. So now we'll move into and talk about the Chelicerata. The subphylum Chelicerata.
Quick question.
Sure.
What distinguishes Trilobita from Crustacea?
Well, they had legs on every single segment where the crustaceans don't. These were large and flat. They kind of had the three body regions. The crustaceans only have two body regions. So, as we'll see with the crustaceans, the mouth parts will be different. Again, they're just more generalized, kind of flat arthropods with... The Chelicerata are kind of characterized by two very distinct characters anyway. Can you think of what the two characters would be? Can you read it real fast?
Huh? The Chelicerae,
yeah, Chelicerae. Yep, they have Chelicerae.
They don't have any antennae.
I was going to say, you guys can read on my notes real fast.
Oh.
But yes.
No, I was looking at the trilobite because I was like, okay, what exactly?
Yeah. No, like I said, I like to ask you guys questions as I lecture. I think it makes it a little better. But if I hand out all my notes and stuff, you often have all the answers to my questions right there in front of you. Or you could, anyway. I don't know if you do. But anyway, yeah, they don't have antennae. You think about all the other groups. Lobsters, crabs, that group, they have antennae. Insects have antennae. Spiders, mites, scorpions don't have antennae. Mm-hmm. What's that?
I was just wondering why they lost their antennae. But don't they have don't the hairs give them the sensory?
Oh, they may have sensory hairs and stuff, but yeah, I don't know what caused them to lose the antennae or...
Some organisms, it might be just that they have a different method of doing the same thing. For others, maybe they just don't need it.
Well, they've got Chelicerae, and then a lot of these organisms, the next pair the first pair of appendages behind the mouth parts are often developed into pedipalps. They're not true walking legs, and so sometimes the pedipalps may be a sensory organ, but they may also help function to move the food into the mouth, too. So, no antennae, and the development of Chelicerae, which are pincer-like feeding organs. Again, as we already mentioned, they have two body regions: the cephalothorax, or sometimes called the prosoma. And then they have the abdomen, or sometimes called the epistosoma. The prosoma normally bears six pairs of limbs. The Chelicerae and five pairs of leg-like appendages. As we'll get farther on, that's where we'll see that some of these groups, one of the pairs is... been developed into pedipalps, so they'll have Chelicerae pedipalps and then the four pairs of legs like we're accustomed to, like in the spiders. Your textbook divides the Chelicerata into three classes: the Meristemata, the Pycnogonida, and the Arachnida. Just be aware that some workers split out another group called the Eurypterida. Again, it's not a very important group for us anyway, but it ought to be something that you're familiar with. And now we're ready for me to start with overheads. Again, these are just the same thing as your handouts. You have to watch me, or there's a lot of days I come in here and forget to put the screen down. And so I'll be just shining this on the whiteboard, which actually I think Jerry does when he lectures anyway. So I like to... have my pens and mark right on the overheads. Jerry, I think he'd rather shine this on the whiteboard, and he just marks things on the whiteboard when he's pointing things out. But anyway, as I said, some people break out this other group called the Eurypterids. Your textbook includes them in this Merostomata. So there you can see on the overhead, it says class Merostomata, subclass Eurypterida. Just be aware that some people break the Eurypterids out into their own class. The Eurypterida is another group that's, I believe, is extinct now. They were sometimes called sea scorpions. They could be quite large. Most of them weren't as big. Most of them were under 20 centimeters. I think I had my notes someplace. Yeah, most under 20 centimeters. But they have been measured, some of them as big as 6 to 7 feet. My notes even say there's one that was measured at 8 feet, 2 inches long. So they could be quite large. Early on, they were mostly marine, but later they evolved to be in brackish or fresh water. Again, they have 6 pairs of appendages. They had the chelicerae, and then 5 pairs of walking legs, except the last pair was more modified for swimming. So they're now extinct. They were probably fearsome marine predators. They were widespread in occurrence. There's no evidence that there was any venom in the tail-like structure. You can see why they were called sea scorpions, though. They look like they almost have a scorpion-like tail. There is some recent evidence now that they might even actually be more closely related to the arachnids than they are to this group. But anyway, again, they're not around now, and you should be aware that of the Eurypterids. And we're a group of these large marine or aquatic predators. Now, in this class Merostomata, we have the Xiphosura. Subclass Xiphosura. These are still around. They've remained unchanged for millions of years. They can be up to 2 feet in length, but these are the king crabs or the horseshoe crabs. My notes say there's only like 4 or 5 species now. Most are extinct, now 4 species in one family, the Limulidae. Limulidae. Yet I don't expect you to remember Limulidae, but if it's for your interest, it's just Limulidae. You can see the basic body shape that they had. Again, kind of a hard covering over the top. They had lateral eyes. It's funny, I'm reading through my notes, it said they had a pair of compound eyes, and then it says, but there was only a single lens over them, so they're no evidence. They don't think they were truly compound, but they have a pair of compound eyes. That's what's over here and there. They also had a pair of median eyes, and those were simple eyes. Again, they have a pair of chelicerae and then 5 pairs of walking legs. Again, the hard carapace over the dorsal surface. I think we should have examples of those in here for you to look at too. So now we start moving into groups that should be a little bit more familiar with you. I mean, you guys look, probably a lot of you have seen horseshoe crabs too. But now we move into the class Arachnida. the class Arachnida. Now we're talking about spiders, mites, scorpions, things like that. This is the largest class of the Chelicerata. There's about 65,000 described species. Again, you'll see as we go through this class, a lot of these orders and families, I'll mention how many described species are known. And you don't have to tell me how many species there are on a test. It's just to kind of give you an idea of whether it's a large group or a small group type of thing. And so anyway, there's about 65,000 species of chelicerates or of arachnids, about 8,000 in North America. Again, they have the two main body parts, the cephalothorax and abdomen. The first pair of appendages behind the mouth parts are the chelicerae. The second pair are called pedipalps, as I've mentioned before. They have groups of eyes, but no compound eyes, and the groups of simple eyes may be arranged differently. In spiders, that's one of the ways they do identifications, maybe to family and genus level, and that is how the eyes are arranged in different groups in that. Respiration is by book lungs and or trachea.
Book lungs?
They're kind of like, again, insects don't have them, so I don't teach that much in morphology, but book lungs are actually would be located, at least in spiders, on the abdomen, and they're kind of like plate-like slits where gas exchange takes place. Your textbook divides the Arachnida into 11 groups. Some people call these subclasses, others refer to them as orders. We're going to call them orders. So, but of those 11 orders that are included in your textbook, we're going to cover six of those, the six most common ones, the scorpions, the spiders, the daddy long legs or harvestmen are in another group, the mites, and pseudoscorpions, and then what we call solfugids. And so, there we'll start with the scorpions. An easy name to remember, it's the order Scorpiones. Again, you're fairly familiar with scorpions probably. They have the two body regions, but they're a little bit different in that the juncture between the two body regions is fairly broad. In this case, and they also have the hardened cover that's called the carapace. And the actual juncture between the front body region and the back is about in that area. So you have this fairly large, called the opisthosoma. And the opisthosoma is divided into kind of two regions. You've got this fairly broad region, which I believe is called the mesosoma. And then this more posterior part, which I believe what they call it, the metasoma. Yeah, the metasoma. So, got the cephalothorax or prosoma anteriorly, and then the posterior region is the opisthosoma, and that's divided into two areas, the more broad anterior part, the mesosoma, and then the more narrow posterior part called the metasoma. The metasoma then ends in a little sting-like structure called the sting, or sometimes called the telson. You see that, I think it's labeled there, sting or telson. They have two median eyes and three to five pairs of lateral eyes. Again, they have that carapace on top. They have an unusual looking structure right behind the last pair of legs. You can see it right here, sticking out here and there, and see it has those little pegs on the end. So they kind of describe it as a comb-like structure, but they're called pectines. See a pectine, it's labeled right there for you. They think the pectines have a sensory function. They may detect vibrations on the substrate. May also have some olfaction function. It's kind of like smell or pick up odors. This group, got all these colors, might as well use a different color. But this group has relatively small chelicerae. You see right here is the two little chelicerae. Mm-hmm. And then they have relatively large pedipalps, which are this whole thing out here. And they have, the pedipalps are what they call chelate, which essentially means they're pincher-like. And then they have four pairs of walking legs, so eight legs total. Most scorpions tend to be more nocturnal, mm-hmm. active at night. You've probably seen the PBS shows where they go hunting for, they go out at night with the black lights, because a lot of times they have areas on their body that kind of fluoresce mm-hmm. under a black light. Most scorpions, I mean, they do have a sting. It's how they subdue their prey. They'll catch a prey and then they'll sting it, and most of the scorpions, I mean, it hurts to get stung, but it's not much different than being stung like by a wasp. Mm-hmm. There are some that are very venomous though, out in the desert southwest. And usually it's the smaller ones that are the more deadly. We had scorpions that occurred in Alabama when I lived in Alabama. And I used to go catch them and put them in aquarium and stuff, but you could go out and catch scorpions. And again, I don't know that I ever got stung by one, but they said that was one that would just be like almost like getting stung by a wasp. It wouldn't really hurt you too much. So, anyway, that's it for the scorpions. And we will continue on here. The next group that we'll talk about is the Arachnida, mm-hmm. or the Arania, class Arachnida, order Arania. And this is the spiders. Notice they still have the two body regions, but now the juncture between the two body regions is fairly narrow. The first segment of the abdomen or the opisthosoma is narrowed. They call that a pedicel. So these are the spiders. There's about 38,000 species described worldwide, 3,700 known from North America. Again, they have the two body regions, the cephalothorax and the abdomen. The abdomen, usually the body segments have kind of fused together. You can't see distinct body segments anymore. So, the cephalothorax is often covered with a hardened shell, again, a carapace. That's the region that bears the legs, the anterior one. Again, they have simple eyes, could be variable in number and arranged differently in different groups. Most of them have eight eyes, but there are some that are fewer. And the anus is terminal, but there is no telson now. You don't have that tail-like structure or the sting. The anus is posterior. Oftentimes near the anus is a group of structures called the spinnerets. Guess what the spinnerets do? They spin silk. Nearly all spiders can spin silk, but not all of them actually create webs. Some of them actually build silk,
or different kinds of
silk homes in the soil, or they just lay down trails as they walk. Another thing that a lot of them do with silk is they'll get up high on a tree and spin a single thread and hang from the end of it. And the breeze will come and catch them, and the silk thread will break. And actually, that's how they disperse. They get blown from one place to another. That's called ballooning. Ballooning is this dispersal by spinning silk thread and letting the wind carry you. There is a pair of chelicerae, a pair of pedipalps, and then the four pairs of legs. The legs look a lot like insectin legs, except they have an extra segment. I don't know without doing a lot of counting, but it's probably this one here is the extra segment. They have an extra segment, and it's called the patella. You know, and us, in humans or vertebrates, we have the knee bone there called the patella. So this extra segment, these would be right there in that knee area. As you can see, the chelicerae, it's interesting. Most spiders, the chelicerae operate going from side to side. That's what these pictures are showing. And I think even in one of your later ones, I think they're kind of pointing out a difference between most true spiders and, here's this one, and the tarantulas. Some will say that the tarantulas aren't true spiders. They're what we call megalomorphs. But you can see the illustration on the right-hand side of this one are the true spiders, and see how the chelicerae operate side to side, mm-hmm. Whereas tarantulas, this is a side view, and they come down. Yeah, they actually kind of fold up underneath. You can see the jaws open, jaws closed.
This is what a true spider does. This is what a tarantula does.
Yeah. And we actually, in Alabama, we had tarantulas also. We used to go out every once in a while and find tarantulas crawling around. And where I went in Brazil, they were all over the place. We were staying in cabins, and these big tarantulas were all over. So, spiders, there's lots of them. They're in all different kinds of habitats. They're predators, feed on other insects, other organisms. Again, generally, we probably would consider them to be beneficial, but they're, again, indiscriminate predators. If a nice butterfly or a bee lands in their web, they'll eat it just as much as they will a pest insect or pest on them. Of course, they have venom. That's how they subdue their prey. Most spiders you can handle them. They won't bite you. And even if they did, the venom isn't that bad. But then again, you do know that there are some very problematic species too. The black widows and the brown recluses and the hobo spiders and stuff. So, and black widows, surprises a lot of people, but they do occur up here. We have black widows in North Dakota. Mm-hmm. We don't see them very often, but every once in a while people will bring them in and say, we didn't know black widows occurred up here. But thing is, black widows, they tend to like to be outside and more reclusive. You don't see them just out in the open. One, at least in the south where we can find them, is if people left cement blocks out in their property. They'd like to get in those, build their web in those holes in the cement blocks. I had one experience. I was collecting down in Louisiana in the wintertime, and there wasn't much out, but a little bit, but I tore, there was a dead tree that had a big chunk of bark, and I tore that bark off, came in a big chunk, and there was literally hundreds and hundreds of black widow spiders under the bark. The brown recluses, on the other hand, do tend to be in people's homes. And where they can be a problem is they like to get into people's closets and maybe hang out, like in, if you got pants hanging on a hanger, they'll get up into the pants legs or something like that. And so, yeah. And I always said, neither one would be fun, but if you got bit by a black widow, their toxin is more of a neurotoxin. And so you feel bad, and you could have trouble breathing a little bit. But when you recover, once you recover and okay, you never will know that you ever got bit by one. Brown recluse, their venom, more, it dissolves your flesh and kind of leaves a huge scar and stuff. And so, again, you should recover in that, but you'll have a landmark to show people from then on that you got bit. So, anyway, I think we will go ahead and talk about the, again, Jerry made all these overheads for the whole class, and in some groups he goes a little overboard, and so he's given lots of examples, so you can look at handouts and see lots of examples of spiders in this case. I don't throw all of them up on the overhead unless there's something interesting that I want to talk about. See those are just some interesting spiders. Well, there was one, let's put this back on here. Again, jumping spiders, crab spiders, all kinds of different spiders. I was going to just mention, this is the one that I was talking about last time, that I think Ryan, if Ryan's listening, is the one he caught. The one in his picture actually looked a little bit more like that one in the far left-hand corner. The one I talk about more and see more often is this one up here called the black and yellow argyope. Again, I call them garden spiders too, but they're big. These are huge things, and they're bright yellow and black in color, and so they look real scary, but I've never heard of anybody having any trouble getting bit or having problems with those. So and I think I went through those handouts too fast, but there probably was some that had some pictures of black widows and brown recluses on it and stuff. And so, what's that?
It's
Loxosceles. Loxosceles, and the other one was Lactrodectes, I think. Yeah, the black widows are Lactrodectes, and the brown recluse is Loxosceles, is the generic names. And then for today, let's just go ahead and take a look at the daddy long legs real quick. It's not a very big group, and so there's not a lot to say, and then we'll quit there and start with the mites tomorrow. We call this order the Opiliones. Sometimes you'll see some of these have more than one name that has been used, but you sometimes may see the term Phalangida. It's just another name for Opiliones. Again, these are, I always called them daddy long legs, but some people call them harvestmen. Again, you probably are well familiar with these. They look like spiders, but their bodies are smaller and their legs are longer. So, they don't have the pedicel like spiders do. It's more of a broad junction, once again, between the two regions of the body. So they're oval with the prosoma and the pistosoma broadly fused, no pedicel. The prosoma is covered with an unsegmented carapace. They usually have two eyes. They don't have the multiple eyes like spiders do. They often have scent glands to help ward off predators. Again, they have the pair of chelicerae, one pair of pedipalps, and the four pairs of legs. Most of these are predators, although some feed more on dead or dying organisms. These, when you get to Halloween time, mm-hmm. and they're trying to, decorations for Halloween and stuff, they always draw those spiders from the front, and they always have the spiders drawn like this, and the legs coming like this. That's a pretty typical Halloween. To me, spiders don't look that way. Spiders have the bodies more like this, and legs just come out and down. It's these guys, the harvestmen, that have what they call knee-high position, that the legs go up and then come back down, and the body's kind of suspended. So, to me, when they draw those Halloween things, oh, look, they're drawing those of Daddy Long Legs.
For a daddy long legs, for a normal spider, it wants to just, you know, have its legs spread out far.
Yeah.
Well, when I think of one on the web, it just wants those to spread out far, unless it's in a defensive position.
Yeah, so.
Are the leg segments identical to the other spiders?
I think so. That would be something I need to check on. I don't know if they have the patella in this group or not. My notes here don't say. It's something I'll have to look, check. I didn't bring a pen with me, but I'm just going to write on here. Check patella. And I'll try to look that up. Anyway, I think we'll quit there for today and start on the mites and ticks tomorrow. Also, this would be the lecture, and this would also then be the first day that we could have a true lab. I mean, again, this lab is just kind of run independent. You can do what, come and go as you want and look at the stuff. But the other arthropods are up here, and so you can start looking at those. In most years, and I think I may put it off till next time we have a lab, but early in the semester, and this kind of goes with the more of the nomenclature and classification lectures that I usually give, but in lab I like to give a little lecture on keys and how to use keys and also how to make or write your own key. Have you guys used keys before?
For outside field guides?
Okay, so that'd be more like probably a pictorial type key.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some wording in that, but it's often, that's the thing is, to do systematics, a lot of times the identification, we build or write keys and you'll have to use keys. Your textbook is full of keys. And I it always surprises me, but we get to this point and most of the students have said, well, no, we've never really actually had to use a key other than maybe doing like you did in a field guide or something. And those are kind of keys, but they're not as scientific or, but I've even had some students tell me that they went and talked to their professor. There's been some in some of the biological sciences even, and their professor said, oh no, we've never really had to use a key either. And I just, ugh. So anyway, so I usually give a little lecture on the concept behind writing. I mean, there's different kinds of keys and how they're organized. And I think you ought to be aware of the different kinds of keys and how they work. But then I also talk about some of the guidelines we use in writing a key to make them useful in that. And then, well, and I think Jerry said he was going to have it ready. I don't know if it's out here or not. We usually give you a little box of not very many, 6 or 8 or 10 different insects and have you guys write a key. Because it also, what it does is, if you're using a key, most oftentimes things are not easy to key out. Mm-hmm. And you'll start using a key and say, oh, this isn't working. Oh, whoever wrote this key. Well, if I make you guys write a key, you start realizing how hard it is to write a key. It's not the easiest thing sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to give that appreciation. Anyway, I don't know if the specimen's out, and I'm not ready to do that now. But this is probably usually when I would do that. But in one of these labs, and it'll only take 15 or 20 minutes to talk about it, and then I'll give you some specimens to... And it's not for a grade. I'll look them over and maybe make some comments on the keys and what I think and that, but it's not a graded thing. It doesn't add into your point total or anything. So anyway, we'll quit there, and you're welcome to start looking at specimens if you want to, or you can work on your collections if you got stuff to work on. And we'll meet tomorrow morning and continue on with the mites and ticks. Any questions? Okay. I will hit.